So I want to just say thank you to Chris.
Hi, Linda George, 3126 Spring Street. On number one, the minutes, and my question is about the lack of information in the minutes. The appellant brought up a good question at that appeal, that we know what the staff writes, we know what happens, but we don't know the discussion. So I noticed in the minutes, it just says Linda George and Dale Gustin spoke up, but were we opposed, that kind of thing. The reason why I'm getting clarification is because I'm finding it very hard to connect the dots myself, and I think that's the problem. And my question about is if the city clerk could explain what in advance of the meeting is when you're providing public comments, and the difference between her city clerk email and her personal email, because once we email you, it converts into your name. Thank you.
Okay. Anyone else? Anyone online, Melissa?
No, sir.
Okay. Is there a question in there that you might want to answer with regard to, I mean, our minutes are a record. We can go online. We can actually hear the verbal part of it, too.
Traditionally and historically, we've done what's called the action minutes. So they record and reference the actions taken by the governing body, you all. Again, that's not atypical. That's a common practice. And then for additional detail and discussion, we archive every one of our meetings online. Any member of the public can go back and listen and soon watch when we have our new system in place and we're back in the chambers any minute or any meetings that they so wish. I believe we do the same for Planning Commission as well. So that's that. In terms, I may need to defer to Melissa on the commenting or the public comment type of period. Essentially, there are instructions on the agenda that explain how to submit electronic comments ahead of the meeting, and they're rather detailed. You would provide an email to cityclerk@prcity.com prior to 12 noon on the day of the council meeting, and if we receive those prior to 12 noon, they will be posted as an addendum to the agenda. And so that's, again, historically how we've collected and distributed and published those online or those electronic public comments. But I'm going to defer to Melissa in case she has additional comments.
Thank you, Chris. I believe you covered it well, but each agenda that the city publishes, be it city council agenda or any other advisory body, does give instructions for public comments and how those can be submitted, and if there are written public comments allowed, those instructions are given. When we publish city council agendas, the instructions indicate that we will accept from the time of the publishing, we accept public comments up until noon on the day, written public comments, so that we can provide those out in an addendum sometime between noon and meeting start time. I believe there may have been some confusion at some point along the way with Ms. George over thinking that somehow indicated they were only accepted on the day of the council meeting, which I have since clarified to her.
My question is, can you define in advance of the meeting, okay, if I submit it before the agenda is posted, that is technically in advance of the meeting?
So I don't, okay.
Okay. Thank you. We'll go ahead and bring it back to council now for discussion and or action.
Mayor Hammond.
Pro Tem Gregory.
I'd like to move we approve items 1 through 11 on the consent agenda.
Second.
Okay, motion by Gregory, second by Strong. Any discussion on consent items 1 through 11? All right, Melissa, we'll call for the question.
Councilmember Gregory?
Aye.
Councilmember Strong?
Aye.
Councilmember Bausch?
Aye.
Councilmember Beal?
Aye.
Mayor Hammond?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
Thank you. Moving on, we'll open up public hearings, and the first one tonight is the adoption of a meeting disruption policy in compliance with SB 707. And Elizabeth, you have that for us?
I do have that for you. Give me just one second. So back in February, we gave you a presentation, pretty long and detailed presentation, about SB 707 and some changes to the Brown Act. One of the items that was included in SB 707 is a requirement for us to adopt a quote-unquote disruption policy. As you may recall, the amendments to the Brown Act added some things about two-way audio-visual communication and things during our meetings. And the intent behind SB 707 was to sort of modernize the Brown Act and deal with some of the technological advances. And so the disruption policy is designed to set forth how we will handle interruptions in our internet service, basically. So we currently have the two-way, right? People can call in and speak and provide public comment, and they can hear the council meeting. If those lines go out, we need to have a policy in place on how we deal with that. Under SB 707, we're required to adjourn the meeting, take a recess for an hour, and try and solve the technological issue. If we cannot solve the technological issue, then the council either will make a finding that the importance of the meeting, the items on the agenda require us to proceed, or you can choose to adjourn until the next meeting or sometime in the future when we solve our technological issues. So that's basically what this policy does. It's required by statute to be adopted by the council at a public hearing, and it needs to be in place before July 1. So we've brought it to you this evening, and I can answer any questions you may have.
Okay. First one for me real quick, Elizabeth. This is regarding more talking to electronic disruption.
Correct.
Not so much if somebody in the audience was disruptive. That's a different kind of a situation.
Correct. The Brown Act also addresses that issue, and it requires you to, you know, give someone notice that they're being disruptive. The ability of the council to do the public's business is what is important. And so if someone is so disruptive that they're prohibiting us from moving forward with a meeting, then as mayor, the council has some options as to how to proceed. You can adjourn the meeting, you can ask the person to be removed. There are some steps, but this policy is focused on if the internet goes out.
Electronics, exactly. Okay, thank you. Any questions? Pro Tem Gregory.
Yeah, just a quick question. So, Elizabeth, will there be a second reading for this? A second time it'll come back before us, or just
No, just this. It's not an ordinance, but it does require a public hearing, which is a little unusual, but
okay.
Pick it up with the state.
Thank you.
Councilman Strong.
Now, it also mentions if a person is disrupting.
Correct.
And that they have to be warned, et cetera. I assume this is if somebody is online.
Correct.
And has their microphone on and is talking to somebody else or having a separate conversation and disrupting the entire
something
of that nature.
Or as you may recall during COVID, when a lot of meetings were being handled solely online, there was an issue of Zoom bombing. This now gives us the ability to expel someone.
Right.
If they're behaving inappropriately during a meeting.
Good. Thank you.
Anywhere else? Okay, we'll bring it open to public comment for this item, public hearing. Anyone in the audience? Seeing none, do we have anything online?
No, sir.
Okay, we'll bring it back to council for direction.
Mayor Hammond, I move we adopt the City of Paso Robles meeting disruption policy.
Second.
Okay, motion by Gregory, second by Bausch. Any discussion on this? Okay, Melissa, we'll call for the question.
Councilmember Gregory?
Aye.
Councilmember Bausch?
Aye.
Councilmember Beal?
Aye.
Councilmember Strong?
Aye.
Mayor Hammond?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
Okay, we need a 10-minute break? Well, yeah, we're going to adjourn for 10 minutes.
AM 1230 KPRL and 99.3 FM, Paso Robles, Atascadero, and Templeton.
Tonight's City Council meeting is in recess and will return in just a short time. Thanks for listening to The Right Choice, AM 1230 KPRL.
If ever there was a sure bet in thoroughbred horse racing, that bet was Citation, the horse that refused to lose. In his first year racing as a two-year-old, Citation took first place in 8 out of 9 starts.
Steady Citation, you can't break sideways.
By the time he stood at the starting gate of the Kentucky Derby in 1948, Citation was so dominant that the Derby didn't even allow bets for a place or for show. Only 5 other horses even dared to line up against him, including Citation's stablemate and only true challenger, Coal Town. And as CBS radio announcer Clem McCarthy called the race, Coal Town and Citation gave the fans a run to remember.
And the turning for home, Coal Town and Citation head and head, and it looks like Eddie Arcaro has got his Derby. They're coming in there just like they were the enemy, riding each other close, and it is Citation coming to the front. He's everything they said he was. He's going to win with his ears pricking. It is Citation by 2, pulling away, and the other horse, Coal Town, is hanging on gamely, but that's all he can do is hang on gamely to be second. Citation wins this Derby just as he pleases.
After winning the Derby, Citation went on to win the Preakness in a breeze.
Around the turn, Citation again goes to the front, and he is leading now by a length and a half. Falcon's Forge is second by 4 lengths. Bovard is third by a length, and Better Self is fourth. Citation turns for home with Arcaro looking over his shoulder. Bovard coming through on the inside is second and making a challenge at Citation. Arcaro takes no chances and shakes up Citation, reminds him he's got a whip with him, and Citation pulls on away. He is now 4 lengths in front, and it was not Bovard who was coming strongest, but Vulcan Forge who rallied, and Vulcan Forge is coming on to the second. Citation the winner by 5 lengths. Vulcan Forge second by 3, and Bovard third by a neck with Better Self fourth.
Then it was on to the Belmont Stakes and a chance to complete the Triple Crown. But once Citation broke from the gate, it quickly became clear that his only real competition was with himself. Once more, Clem McCarthy called it to the finish.
And the others already are trailing so far that you're glad the distance is a mile and a half. And Escadrew is making his move on the outside, and he's got a horse to catch, a horse 4 lengths in front of him. But here comes the real test for Citation. They said they might not go a mile and a half. He's been a mile and a quarter. We'll find out now, because they got a quarter of a mile to come. And Citation is pulling away. He'll have to collapse to lose this race. It is Citation going to win the Belmont Stakes, the third angle of the Triple Crown.
Citation won the Belmont by 11 lengths and streaked to 16 straight victories over the course of 2 years. In his first 29 races, Citation was led to the winner's circle 27 times, one of the greatest thoroughbred racing records ever.
Tonight's City Council meeting is in recess and will return in just a short time. Thanks for listening to The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL.
It was the biggest overseas military operation in the biggest war in world history, and its best-kept secrets as well. D-Day, a military term for the first day of a military operation, was a fitting description for the event, which turned the tide of battle in World War II. Plans by the United States and Britain to invade German-occupied Northern Europe had been in the works for nearly 2 years before the summer of 1944, when the supreme commander of those Allied forces, General Dwight Eisenhower, gave his assent to begin a massive landing at the French coastal town of Normandy. Those still awake in America and listening to their radios in the wee hours of June 6, 1944, were most likely listening to the harmonic band of Leo Diamond and his Harmonaires when suddenly, at 12:41 a.m. Eastern Time, the broadcast was interrupted with the first news of the invasion.
We interrupt our program to bring you a special broadcast. The German news agency Transocean said today in a broadcast that the Allied invasion had begun. I repeat, the German news agency Transocean said today in a broadcast that the Allied invasion had begun. There was no Allied confirmation.
Within hours, official confirmation of the invasion came in a broadcast transmitted from the supreme headquarters of the Allied Expeditionary Force in London.
Soldiers, sailors, and airmen of the Allied Expeditionary Force, you are about to embark upon the great crusade toward which we have striven these many months. The eyes of the world are upon you. The hopes and prayers of liberty-loving people everywhere march with you.
When the news broke, the NBC radio network sounded their four-chime alert. The fourth chime was a note added to the familiar three-chime NBC musical signature. It was an emergency signal, sounded on the air to effect the immediate gathering of key NBC operating personnel responsible for broadcasting news.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the NBC Newsroom in New York, where we are standing by to bring you the news of the reported operations against the continent by the Allies, which only the German radio has so far announced. The National Broadcasting Company intends to continue with its network service coast to coast throughout the rest of this night. This is our official notification to stations affiliated with NBC that we will continue broadcasting throughout the remainder of these nighttime hours. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
For the next 24 hours, network radio was on flash basis, ready for round-the-clock operation to broadcast uninterrupted news of the invasion, which Allied forces had termed Operation Overlord, but which would remain forever celebrated as simply D-Day. Despite heavy resistance by German troops, the landings were a tactical success, as Allied troops gained their first foothold in France since the beginning of the German occupation of that nation 4 years earlier. Less than 3 months later, on August 25th, 1944, Allied troops liberated the French capital of Paris.
Tonight's City Council meeting is in recess and will return in just a short time. Thanks for listening to The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL.
Welcome to Heroes of the Air. True stories of those who flew for America and earned the nation's supreme military award, the Congressional Medal of Honor. Heroes of the Air is brought to you by the Air Force Association, an independent nonprofit aerospace organization which promotes public understanding of the role aerospace power plays in our national defense. Your host for Heroes of the Air is Gene Pell. In the middle of 1943, U.S. B-17s and B-24s of the 9th Air Force were flying daily missions from bases in North Africa in support of Allied ground forces fighting in Italy. But military planners had another objective in mind that they hoped would cripple the Nazi war effort. Over 1,200 miles away lay important German oil refineries, which if destroyed or severely damaged, could seriously disrupt the enemy's fuel supplies and hinder its mobility. Ploiești, Romania, August 1st, 1943. 178 B-24 Liberator bombers were assigned the mission, which was to be conducted at treetop levels after the long flight to the target. The dangers were clear. The cost could not be imagined. Army Air Corps Lieutenant Colonel Addison E. Baker was leading his command, the 93rd Heavy Bombardment Group, on that fateful day. As he was approaching the target, his aircraft was hit by a large caliber anti-aircraft shell, seriously damaged and set on fire. Lieutenant Colonel Baker ignored the fact he was flying at that time over terrain suitable for safe landing. He refused to jeopardize the mission by breaking up the lead formation and continued unswervingly to lead his group to the target, where he dropped his bombs with devastating effect. Only then did he leave the formation. However, despite his valiant efforts to gain sufficient altitude for the crew to escape by parachute, his aircraft crashed in flames after his successful efforts to avoid other planes in the formation. By extraordinary flying skill and brilliant leadership, Lieutenant Colonel Baker rendered outstanding, distinguished, and valorous service to the nation. For his conspicuous gallantry and intrepidity in action against the enemy, above and beyond the call of duty, Army Air Corps Lieutenant Colonel Addison E. Baker was posthumously awarded the Congressional Medal of Honor. The Air Force Association is proud to bring you Heroes of the Air, dedicated to those who earned the nation's highest military award, the Congressional Medal of Honor. Their service and sacrifice reflect an ideal that puts others and country above self. AFA salutes all men and women in the Air Force who so selflessly serve our country each day at home and around the globe. Heroes of the Air is produced by Pelcom Communications in association with Radio America.
Tonight's City Council meeting is in recess and will return in just a short time. Thanks for listening to The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL.
Public hearings, item number two. Piper, are you going to have that item for us, please?
Yeah, Piper Smith will be making the presentation. Just a quick overview. This is a code amendment for the food truck item. You've made some changes to the regulations. We also had to go through Planning Commission on these code text amendments. Piper will walk us through this. We do have an interpreter in the back, so if anybody needs interpreting for the meeting, the person in the back can help them with that. So Piper, take it away.
Thank you, Warren.
Good evening, Council members, Mayor. Tonight I will be presenting the first reading of the Food Truck Zoning Code Amendment. This has been kind of a long time coming, so excited to be here. Looking at our timeline, started in August 5th with a legislative review. This gave the public a chance to go over what are the permitting standards that we have in effect, what are the operational requirements for food truck vendors to operate. The result of that legislative review was the formation of the Food Truck Ad Hoc Committee. This first meeting on September 22nd, 2025, gave us a chance to host a pretty substantial listening session where we heard from the public's questions, comments, concerns for specific, permitting requirements and operational standards. At the second Food Truck Ad Hoc Committee meeting in November, staff had the opportunity and the time to get a little bit more direction, analyze some of the concerns and questions that the public had, and discuss some of these recommendations back to the public. This led to the last time I was standing in front of you all, December 16th, where we finalized four updates to the operational requirements, as well as recommended the zoning code amendment, which brings us here tonight. The zoning code amendment was then brought forth in front of Planning Commission on April 14th. And tonight we are here in front of you to discuss the first reading. So as an overview, given it's been a pretty substantial amount of time since we last discussed, we are here to discuss food trucks. This is categorized as a DMV registered vehicle with a environmental health from County of Slope health permit, mobile food facility permit, that vends food and or beverages. So what we will not be discussing tonight are pop-ups, carts, merchandise sales, etc. Going into location, so Paso Robles Municipal Code Section 21-69-120 within the zoning code explicitly regulates what is happening on private property. So we will not be discussing food trucks on city property, on sidewalks, or street vendors. Looking at an overview of the current city permitting process, their first step is to obtain a mobile food facility permit for the County of Slo. This allows them to operate with it anywhere in the county. If they would like to come to City of Paso Robles to operate, they apply for a city business license, which gets routed to three different departments: City Industrial Waste to acknowledge their discharge, the Fire Department to ensure they have the life safety permits, and the Planning Department to acknowledge the operational requirements and obtain the correct food truck permit based on the duration or how they are operating within the city. An important thing to keep in mind is a lot of these aspects, the mobile food facility, the business license, the fire department inspection, is renewed and inspected annually. So given the mobile nature of food trucks, they always have to circle back, make sure that their permits, their requirements are being met every single year. Looking at the food truck operational requirements, again, just as some background and context, required to be located on private property, property owner permission. They're accessory to a permanent business, on paved parking surfaces, litters to be removed, no discharge of liquid, temporary shade structures to be moved after operating. They are held to the noise provisions, have established hours of operation, not impede on on-site circulation or egress, and not to store any overnight equipment. With that being said, and at the last City Council meeting, City Council finalized four guidelines to utilize acoustic panels for those that were not meeting noise ordinance, to allow accessory structures, including a table, chairs, and shade structure, to require a minimum setback for food trucks operating vending towards the public right-of-way, do not impede on public right-of-way, and that a temporary use permit would not be granted on private property within 100 feet of the city park. So we are here today to discuss the second two points that were discussed at the last City Council meeting and the recommendations made and the goal, what we are trying to achieve tonight, to amend the Paso Robles Municipal Code section to require a temporary use permit for all food trucks operating in the city and vending to the public, with the exception of operating as a caterer for an event is not required to have a TUP, and to amend the code to require on-site commercial businesses hosting more than seven events to obtain a temporary use permit for reoccurring events. We're going to go a little chronologically through the code, kind of pieced out into each section, starting at the top of 2169.120. This code, as elaborated in the previous slides, does not apply to food trucks as part of a city event, such as a certified farmers market, street fair, or any other event that requires a special event permit. Food truck operators are required to coordinate and work with the responsible agency for said event, said festivity, to get the appropriate permission to be there and operate. What we are adding to this section is the exception for caterers to be exempt from requiring a temporary use permit. Catering is defined within this definition as invited by a commercial business to provide food and or beverages at a commercial business site for a special event. An example of this is if Chris's Tasting Room invites Steve's food truck to cater their annual special event. They are not required to get a temporary use permit, but they are required to meet all operational requirements. Your health permit, your fire inspection, the setbacks, the accessory structures, etc. So when do you need a temporary use permit? We divided this into two sections for food trucks and commercial business sites to align with City Council's recommendation previously. For food trucks, all food trucks, regardless of the duration, are required to have a temporary use permit and conform by the requirements. An example of this, Steve's food truck wants to vend to the public at John's Auto Body Shop. Steve is required to obtain a temporary use permit. For commercial business sites, Chris's Tasting Room hosts seven or more events with Steve's food truck. Chris can obtain a temporary use permit to have Steve's food truck vend at his events. Another section we've added to provide clarity to food truck operators when reviewing this section and some more guidance on the permitting is adding explicit language for the duration. So a temporary use permit is allowed to last up to 365 days. Because of how we work tangentially with the business license, temporary use permit for a food truck would expire at the same time that their business license would require. So this would allow, when their business license gets routed to planning, create a streamlined communication and correspondence with the applicant. Hi, do you have a temporary use permit? Do you plan on renewing it this year? Where do you want to operate? To what extent are you operating? So on and so forth, in one kind of sweep motion rather than throughout the year. Another line item is adding payment, just clarifying that the food truck temporary use permit is the same fee as the temporary use permit, which in the recent fee updates about $214. And based on the kind of flexibility with the temporary use permit expiration, that flat fee would not be prorated for a portion of the year. Another concern that got brought up by food truck operators is how many sites can be tied to one temporary use permit. This would allow food truck operators to apply for two specific locations per temporary use permit application. So it does not limit them to two sites, but merely states within one temporary use permit application, you get site A and B. You can come back another time to establish site C and D at a later time if you wish. Exactly. So it doesn't limit it to two, but just states within one application you're allowed to have two. So looking, kind of directly comparing the existing permitting requirements to what we are proposing tonight, a main goal of this is to ease a lot of enforcement efforts with food trucks. So there was a 7-day threshold that caused a lot of confusion. With that, as you can see on the right, we are then requiring when a temporary use permit is required, unless you are exempt, city event, caterer, so on and so forth, or when you need a conditional use permit for food trucks. One thing to note here is we are also recommending removing food trucks operating in one location 1 year or more with a site plan review, as this is a vested right. And given the mobile nature of food trucks, going through the permitting process to establish something that's meant to be temporary in nature did not align with the general operation of the use. In addition to that, sorry, to backtrack, since the adoption of the zoning code and the creation of the site plan approval, there had been no applications for said use. Moving on, getting into a little bit of the details and some cleanup items within the code, operational requirements in section F. For temporary shade structures, there was a little bit of duplicate language. So we are recommending to remove temporary shade structure line item while keeping equipment storage. They give the same message, remove the equipment, food truck, and any associated accessory structures after vending without causing any confusion about the guidelines set in December about temporary shade structures. Moving on to business license requirement, we are recommending removing a second part of it discussing furnishing evidence of insurance due to when you obtain a temporary use permit, the insurance between the private property owner and the food truck operator requesting to vend is between them solely, as it is not associated to any city event or city insurance. We are also correcting, previously it referenced an incorrect title chapter, so we are correcting it to Title 3, Chapter 3.28. Looking at fire department inspections, Fire Marshal Paul Patty has been spearheading a permitting effort with the Central Coast Fire Prevention Association. So this language used to state just the city of Paso Robles, but given the recent California Fire Code update, the Central Coast Fire Prevention Association is working together to create a streamlined permitting process where you can obtain a permit in Paso and be good for various jurisdictions within the Central Coast and vice versa. This is still in the process and we are slowly gathering more and more information and fine-tuning that as we go along. But this way, within our zoning code, it would align with that ongoing process. Moving on to Chapter 2120, temporary use permits. Again, this section covers a vast array of temporary uses. However, food trucks is listed within it. Therefore, we are recommending to clean up the language and remove that 7-day threshold language. Therefore, a food truck independently operating and vending to the public would not be exempt from a temporary use permit. Whereas now, in allowed temporary uses, making it clear that it is just no more than 1 year without that 7-day exemption. Continuing on to definitions, just to create continuity between the Slo County Environmental Health and our zoning code definitions, we are simply adding a vending vehicle or mobile food facility into that definition to provide clarity. That can come in the form of a trailer, a truck, so they do have different shapes and sizes. But if you have a mobile food facility permit with a Slo, DMV registration, vending food and beverages, et cetera, you constitute as a food truck. Another cleanup item, so within the zoning code land use matrix, previously there was a permitted / temporary use requirement coding, whereas this will then be changed to all be temporary use permit. In addition to this, we'll be removing the language about site plan reviews. The goal of this, again, if the food truck operator is reading the zoning code, it will prompt them to go to section 2169120, and unless they are exempt from catering, city events, etc., to read and acknowledge all of those requirements. Jumping over into the Uptown Town Center specific plan, food trucks and food truck courts were not previously within the zoning or within the Uptown Town Center matrix. We are recommending the addition of these line items due to the high popularity of food trucks operating on the west side of town. These align with the allowed areas and uses, just including them. So they're still commercial, they're not allowed in residential or open space areas. Here we have two of the same maps, one with citywide, one zoomed into that Uptown Town Center specific plan, showing where those commercial areas are, where city staff would be allowed to grant, based on the zoning, a food truck temporary use permit. To jump aside a little bit, looking at CEQA, this project did not prompt any environmental review. It does not qualify as a project. And to wrap it all up today, I know we went over a lot and have been discussing this for quite some time. We are here to achieve two goals, and that is to amend the code to require temporary use permit for all food trucks with the exemption of caterers, and to amend the code to require on-site commercial businesses hosting seven or more events to obtain a temporary use permit. You have your options here today to leave the existing zoning code in Uptown Town Center specific plan, to adopt the zoning code amendment and the specific plan amendment as stated, to introduce the amendment with some modifications, or to refer the project back to Planning Commission or to staff for additional analysis. With that, staff is recommending and Planning Commission to introduce by first reading, for first reading, by title only, Ordinance XXXX to amend Paso Robles Municipal Code and specific plan as stated on the screen. And with that, I will leave it open to any questions or comments. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Piper. Start on my left. Councilman Beal.
Thank you so much. And I just think overall this is so much clearer, it's more consistent. I was really impressed with the ad hoc process, with the engagement of the food truck owners to inform how this would move forward. I think it's going to be more streamlined for the food truck operators. It's going to be more streamlined for you to have things sort of calendaring at the same time of getting rid of the 7-day was going to be, you know, very appreciated, I'm sure, by enforcement. My question is, if you could go back to those two zoning slides. You went through those pretty quickly. And maybe one or two before this. They were like little tables, yeah. If you could just talk through this a little bit for people that maybe aren't familiar with zoning.
Absolutely. So I will start in the zoning code just for consistency's sake. So as you can see, food trucks are permitted and no change has been made to where they are allowed, just what permit is required where they're allowed. They are allowed in commercial uses, they're not allowed in residential areas or open space. And staff tried to duplicate this in the Uptown Town Center specific plan. T3N and T4N are both highly populated residential neighborhood with primary residential focus in the zone, whereas your F zones, your TC1, your TC2, your Riverside Corridor are your commercial zones with primarily commercial uses on them as they are today. So the goal was to align the two as well as be consistent with the language of what zones are allowed in, and what permit is required within them. And then we have the two maps to demonstrate, with the green being where we could issue a temporary use permit on commercial property. And the red, as you may be able to see, they're a little small, are primarily residential neighborhoods and open space.
Pro Tem Gregory.
Yes, great job, Piper. I have a couple more questions for you. So, when they go to renew their license or temporary use permit, they have to go back to the health and fire department and the city, correct?
Yes, so typically in what I've experienced from a staff perspective is they will get their mobile food facility permit first, as that is kind of all encapsulated no matter where you're serving or when. Locally, they tend to start with the business license, and then it gets routed, fire department, temporary use permit. So the goal is, it's a one-touch system, so although you're potentially dealing with multiple departments, it happens at one time with concise language, and that's something with staff is trying to internally make some tweaks to the website, make the interfacing very user-friendly to ensure that they are directed in the right place no matter where they start in their permitting process.
And then I have a technical question. If someone wants to hire a food truck operator, is there any regulation of that food truck operator as a caterer?
Aside from the operational requirements, so
which would be what?
Being on private property, property owner permission, the generator requirements, and so those are outlined. I might have to jump back, but those are still required to be upheld. All the permitting standards, the health and safety requirements, etc.
So it would be subject to health and safety requirements.
Yes, that is correct. Question.
And then you had another slide up there about a truck staying somewhere less than 7 days. They're not required a temporary use permit, but they are required the health and safety permits, correct?
Pertaining to catering or pertaining to an independent?
To just a food truck operator with less than 7 days.
Yes. So no matter the duration or the nature of the food truck operation, these operational requirements are intended and
so it's mandatory throughout.
Okay. Yes.
That is our question. Good job. Thank you.
Councilman Bausch.
Great job. Thank you. Lots of little knots tied nicely. So one of the questions I seem to remember are I'll call them, people, gypsies coming in from out of area for a day or a weekend, something like that, showing up at the park or, the Lowe's parking lot, the empty lot there where Union transitions like at 46. How do we address those guys?
Yes, so this allows by getting rid of that 7 day threshold. If it is very clear to enforcement officers that a food truck is operating and is not tied to any sort of event going on, whether that be a public city event or a private event, it allows the enforcement officer to approach the truck and inquire, do you have a temporary use permit? Business license, health department requirements, and send them in our direction. Staff has been working on creating handouts to provide enforcement as well as different agencies, again, just as a means of streamlining those communication pathways and getting them in the right direction of, we understand your desire to operate here, let's find a way to make it happen with the right avenues.
Will the enforcement officer be able to close them down, cite them? How does that work?
Yes, so if they do not have the necessary permitting or are not meeting the operational requirements, they would be asked to leave.
Okay. All right. And so that's anywhere that a temporary use permit is required, and the interloper, we'll say, alleged interloper, does not have it, they can be asked to leave.
Yes, and with the temporary use permit, there are causes for revocation. So if there are repeat offenders or individuals who are not abiding by the conditions of their temporary use permit, it does grant the approval body to revoke that permit from them as well.
And so the temporary use permit, those would be obtainable during regular business hours?
Within our code, it allows staff up to 2 weeks for processing time for temporary use permits. That is a minimum as well as the Permit Streamlining Act. And so although it may not be able to be granted day of,
right.
If it is on a weekday and we are open, we've had some individuals come to us directly to start kind of the permitting process and inquire about what it may entail.
So they could come in. I'm thinking in my mind they would apply online, but they could come in.
Absolutely.
In person, but it still could take up to 2 weeks.
Yes, and based on the completeness of their application is a big contributing
factor. And the inspection.
Yes.
All right, good to know. Thank you, Piper. Thank you.
Fred, any questions? You're good? Okay. Piper, the one thing that bothered me right from the beginning was that we had an occasion, I think, where there was a food truck on private property, but yet they were using the sidewalk, for a lot of their space. And I'm sure it was addressed by the ad hoc, but setbacks and things like that, that's incorporated here somewhere?
Yes, so at the December City Council meeting, City Council established a 9-foot setback, which is half of the width of a parking stall, if the food truck is vending towards the public right away. So if they're facing internally and their customers are loitering within the parking lot, that's a little safer than right next to, say, a busy street or a sidewalk where people are trying to pass by. That's illustrated on this second image here. As well as the 9 feet gives us the flexibility of they're not being pushed to intrude on circulation of the lot was the goal.
Very good. Okay. Thank you. That's all the questions I had. I'll open it up then to the public. Anybody wishing to address this item before we come back and discuss further? Okay. Seeing none. Anyone online?
No, sir.
Okay. Bring it back to council then for discussion and or action.
I'd like to, what's that?
Oh. Do we have?
He wants to write, he's writing his card.
Do we have somebody that wants to?
Sorry,
yeah. Okay, then I'll hang on.
And he speaks great English.
Yeah, you can get that done afterwards if you like.
Can you go back to the one you were showing with the distance?
Absolutely.
Go ahead
Hello,
and answer
everyone.
Your question.
Yeah, how's it going? My name is Jerry Torres. I'm on 2748 Spring Street. I'm a business owner from Ice Cream Shop. My question is, in general, when would it be enforced for the distance of those locations? We know there's one close to us. We want to make sure that they're abiding by these rules. Would those rules also, my other question, when would they start being enforced? Is it going to be enforced as of moving forward today or already in process?
Got it. We can get that question for you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. Anyone else?
Do you have any more questions?
I think that was his main question right there about timing of effect.
I just want to say, sir, I want to say thank you. You've been here every step of the way with us, helping us understand your needs. So thank you for being here.
No problem. I appreciate it. Thank you guys for hearing me out as well.
Okay. Thank you. Piper, can you go in and address the time effectiveness of the ordinance?
Yes. So in regards to the setback question, that is actively being enforced. However, they're given this transition period of temporary use permit and when this was adopted, the site in question does have a temporary use permit authorized with a specific location, whereas that permit is up for renewal in October, where we will reassess based on the guidelines established in December to make sure they're abiding by the setbacks.
Okay.
So I do have a question to follow up on what he said. He is asking about separation between food trucks. Is there a regulation for that in our code?
No, there's not. So as long as it is one food truck per site, as long as they have the temporary use permit to be operating, they can be every site adjacent to each other. The second that there are two or more food trucks operating on a site does trigger the need for a conditional use permit.
Thank you.
Okay. Anyone online, Melissa?
No, sir.
Okay. Bring it back to council for discussion and or action on this.
Mayor Hammond.
I just want to make a quick comment before we move
discussion.
Forward.
Go ahead.
You can make a comment.
Thank you.
That's enough.
So again, I want to thank the city manager and planning department staff for your work on this. It was a lot of work. And, I recognize that. Bringing in the translation services, I think, added a lot of value to the process and helped make the process better. Even just, having the right database of reaching out to the food truck owner so that everybody was noticed and had the right information. Thank you to everybody that showed up every meeting, right? So I think this is an example of good governance. I know it was hard for everybody involved. I know it was a lot of work, but I think the end result is going to be better, easier, clearer, potentially more efficient for everybody involved. So thanks everybody for the effort and for participating.
I also want to thank the ad hoc members, Councilman Gregory and Bausch, you know, for putting their time in to make this happen, along with everyone else that participated, so.
So I'd like to make a comment before I make my motion. One thing that everybody wants to keep in mind, we should all keep in mind here, is during the ad hoc process, and we said it several times, if there's something that's not working in the ordinance, we can always make a change in the future. So I think, I have to say, I think Pfeiffer's done an incredibly good job of covering all the bases, but if something comes up and we can figure it out, get the information to either Mr. Bausch or myself or Pfeiffer, and we can address it. So with that, I'd like to move we introduce for first reading by title only, Ordinance XXXX, amending Paso Robles Municipal Code Section 21.69.120, Food Trucks and Food Truck Courts, Chapter 21.20, Temporary Use Permits, Table 21.32-1, Zoning District Use Regulations, and Section 21.91.070, F Definitions and Amending the Uptown Center Specific Plan, Table 5.3-1, Allowed Land Uses, Permitting and Permitting Requirements.
Second.
Okay, motion by Gregory, second by Bausch. Discussion.
I just want to say that it seems that people are very creative in the field. So as Mr. Gregory alluded, if there are changes or amendments that need to be made in the future going forward, please let us know. Bring it back. Contact us. We'll be happy to talk to you. We'll talk to staff. And, this isn't the final. Hopefully it is. Hopefully this makes everything work really well. But if we need to talk about it some more, we're open. Come find us. Thank you very much for your participation. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you guys also, Pfeiffer and Warren, Community Development Department, for making this happen. I know it was a big effort, so thank you.
Thank you.
Melissa, go ahead and call for the question.
Councilmember Gregory?
Aye.
Councilmember Bausch?
Aye.
Councilmember Beal?
Aye.
Councilmember Strong?
Aye.
Mayor Hammond?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you all.
We're on to, we'll close the public hearings and go on to discussion items. Tonight we have one discussion item, preliminary overview of the general and supplemental sales tax budget for fiscal years 26-27, 27-28, and the five-year capital improvement program. Ryan, you have that for us?
Good evening, City Council, Mr. Mayor, and City Council, Ryan Cornell, Administrative Services Director. I'm here tonight to present our first budget report for the new fiscal years, and new two fiscal years 27-28 and 26-27 and 27-28. Before we get going, I think Mr. City Manager, Mr. Hewitt, has a couple of comments to make ahead of my presentation.
Yes, thank you, Mayor, Council. Before we get into the numbers, I wanted to provide kind of a broader review of our budget and our fiscal environment that we're moving into for the next 2 years. As you recall, several years ago, the Council directed staff to return to a two-year budget cycle, which our current budget cycle concludes on June 30th. And so we are here today to talk a little bit more about what our budget will look like for July 1, starting July 1. With that, I wanted to provide some high-level perspective on some work that we have been doing and analysis we've been doing internally over the last several months as we prepared to bring these numbers to you. As Mr. Cornell mentioned tonight, we're really focused on giving you an overview of the general fund of the supplemental sales taxes, Measure J20 and I-24. As well as a review of the capital improvement program. Big picture, what we're seeing is that after several years of pretty substantial growth in our major revenue sources, which are property tax, sales tax, and hotel tax, We're starting to see two out of the three really plateau. So sales tax and hotel tax, as you look at Ryan's numbers, have really flatlined, which is causing, we're not in a deficit position, but it's causing our organization to have to take a closer look at our expenditures and our expenses and make sure we are budgeting accordingly. Why is this happening? Well, one, the tourism world in travel is softening. We have seen that reflected in industry data that we receive both from the hotel industry and from the wine industry. And I think as you go out and talk to community members that are in those industries, they have provided that same feedback. And so as the economy goes, so does our major revenue streams, and we're certainly seeing the impacts of the tourism industry softening. The other thing we're seeing on a more macro level is higher borrowing costs and cost in general increasing. That's translated to very cautious consumer spending habits, which again are reflected in both our sales tax and our hotel tax revenue line items. On the expenditure side of things, much like on the private side, we have seen increases in personnel cost. Something else of note, we've seen this year an increase in our risk management costs, and that's not due to any one specific issue that the city has experienced. More so, it's a reflection of municipal risk management and the liabilities and experiences that cities have faced across the state and the nation, and it's more costly to insure and provide insurance in those types of programs for cities. And then, of course, year to year, we do have contractual obligations, contracts or services that continue to show growth. I think the key message that I wanted to share was that we have had to be very prudent in our fiscal planning, and I want to commend our team for recognizing where we're at from a budget perspective and tailoring and prioritizing what is in this budget to reflect, you know, of course, council goals that we'll continue to talk about, but also the most critical items. Next slide, please. I'll jump through these next slides a little quicker and let Ryan get on with the numbers. But I wanted to remind the council that beyond looking beyond tourism, we do have economic resiliency tools and activities in place. We are continuously looking for ways we can be a pro-business environment as we look to process development and, you know, make sure that businesses can start, grow, and expand and pass the Robles. We are obviously working on Spaceport and the work out in the airport area, the tech corridor. We think there's a real opportunity to capitalize on aerospace. And then, of course, I think we're coming up on year three of our five-year economic development strategic plan, and there's quite a few action items in there that Mr. Sloan and Mr. Malowitz are working, again, to incubate and support local businesses and those that want to relocate here. Although we're not ready for prime time just yet, the fruits of some of this labor will come to fruition, you know, over the next council meeting or two, as we've had continued interest in the airport area. And we will be bringing some additional leases to you for new businesses that are looking to enter the Paso market. Next slide. As we look at staffing and service levels, we are not anticipating at this point any sort of hiring freeze or layoffs. All of our authorized positions are fully funded in the budget that's before you. That means we're going to be able to continue to provide core services at a relatively stable level. However, we're not at this point going to be recommending that we increase our staffing complement really beyond where it's at today. There's very limited number of full-time equivalent proposals, I think less than two FTE equivalents in the police department due to some restructuring and due to responding to some of the recommendations made in the standards of cover study that was presented to you a few